Inside Florida Politics. The Essential Podcast, powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett, coming to you unredacted from our studio in West Palm Beach, Florida, and I'm joined from Florida's West Coast by Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor Zach Anderson.
Hey, George, the radio equipment here in Sarasota is not cooperating today, but I've got my phone and I'm ready to roll.
And we're joined by our very busy man in Tallahassee, Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy.
Hi, George.
All right. Well, America's biggest political contributor over the last three elections was in Florida this week. Despite expensive disappointments for him in last year's governor and U.S. Senate races in Florida, liberal billionaire Tom Steyer says he is not giving up on the Sunshine State in 2020. If Steyer has his way, President Donald Trump won't even be on the ballot next year. He's trying to prod Democrats to begin impeachment proceedings against Trump. We will talk on the podcast about the Steyer factor in America's largest swing state. Also, why has it become such a wrenching exercise for Democrats to condemn anti-Semitism? Remember the fireworks last month when within the Democratic Party, when a seemingly straightforward resolution to condemn anti-Semitism came up in Congress. Well, now John Kennedy will tell us about a similar anti-Semitism debate causing heartburn among Democrats in Tallahassee. And John is also going to tell us about a massive highway building campaign that's taking shape in Florida. Is it going to improve traffic or merely line the pockets of a few property owners and construction companies? But first, I believe I'm hearing some kind of funky royalty-free music playing. And listeners, the podcast know when you hear that music, it's time for our Pick a Number segment. That's the portion of the podcast where each of us puts forward a number, and then later on we explain what that number means in Florida politics. John Kennedy, why don't you go first? What number do you have for us this week?
Sure thing, George. Yeah, my number this week is 10.
Okay, 10 for John Kennedy in Tallahassee. And Zach Anderson, what about your number?
My number this week is 15 million.
Say that number again.
15 million.
Okay, 15 million for Zach Anderson, always the curve buster there in Sarasota. I'm back in the lower numbers category myself. My number this week is going to be 62. So if you're keeping track, and we allow you to take notes, although we will mention the numbers again at the end of the podcast. But John Kennedy has a number 10, Zach Anderson with 15 million, and George Bennett, that's me, with the number 62. We will explain later in the podcast what those numbers mean in Florida politics, but let's get straight to our lineup. You know, I mentioned at the top of the podcast that billionaire Tom Steyer was in Florida this week. Over the last three election cycles, 2014, 2016, and 2018, Steyer has contributed $240 million to federal candidates and campaigns. That's the most of any donor in that time. The next biggest contributor is conservative Republican mega donor Sheldon Adelson. He has ponied up about $212 million. Those are just the federal totals. Steyer has pumped about $30 million into state races in Florida since 2014. And last year, he and his Next Gen America were key contributors to Democrat Andrew Gillum in the primary and the general election. In fact, Steyer was in Tallahassee on election night last year for Gillum because he said that was the most important race in the country. Well, Gillum, of course, lost by about 0.5% to Republican Ron DeSantis, and another Steyer target, Republican Rick Scott, won his U.S. Senate race in Florida last fall over Democrat Bill Nelson by even a closer margin. So I talked to Steyer this week and asked him about those races and what he's planning to do in 2020. Here's what he had to say.
I think it was unsuccessful at the top of the ticket, and probably the single, those two races were probably the single most disappointing in the whole night. But it's also true that in terms of registering people, engaging people, turnout, this was a very good year for Democrats. It just wasn't quite good enough. And, you know, that's the foundation for 2020.
All right. So he was certainly disappointed in those two races in Florida, but he did see a silver lining in terms of the improved Democratic turnout. And so he hopes to build on that in 2020. He was not real specific about what he'll be doing in 2020, but here's what he did have to say about what he anticipates for next year.
Well, I mean, at a minimum, we'll be doing the youth organizing. We were on 45 campuses last year. We're still on over half of them. We'll definitely be ramping back up, and we'll also be going door to door.
All right. So Steyer is going to be in the mix in Florida next year. Now this week he was in Boca Raton to promote his efforts to impeach Donald Trump. He's got about 8 million people that have signed this petition, including more than half a million in Florida. And probably more important than them signing the petition is that means that they have entered their names and contact information into Steyer's database. And right now, at least, Steyer is trying to get all these people to pressure House Democrats to support impeachment of President Trump. And that's kind of a tall order because you might remember House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who's certainly no friend of Trump, recently said that she didn't want to proceed with impeachment. She said that it was too divisive, and she said something like Trump is just not worth it. So Steyer, though, through this group Need to Impeach, and really it should be called Need to Impeach and Hold Televised Hearings. His basic theory is that if you can start impeachment proceedings and get hearings and you know they'll be televised. And he said it would be like the Watergate hearings in the early 70s, which he called the world's greatest soap opera. And ultimately, you know, he would make the argument that Nixon was forced from office not because of legal arguments, but just because of the popular groundswell against him. Here's how he described that when he was speaking to this audience in Boca Raton this week.
And what really happened was, people in the United States decided he's gone over the line. It wasn't like, you know, a criminal trial where you have 12 jurors and they decide this happened on the night of November 12th and therefore, you know, Richard Nixon robbed the liquor store. They just decided he's lying to the American people. He's not living up to his oath of office. He's a criminal. He's got to go.
All right, so Steyer's theory is that you'll create this soap opera that people will become so turned against Trump that even Republican senators would hear from their constituents and go along. I don't know if that's actually true or not. I don't know if Steyer actually believes that's true or not. But certainly, I think Steyer definitely believes at the very least that having these hearings would be bad for Trump and good for Democrats in 2020. Zach and John, what do you think about the Steyer factor in Florida for next year's elections? Let me start with you, Zach.
Well, I guess I'm kind of skeptical of how big of an impact Steyer will have in 2020. You know, he's kind of supported a lot of lost causes, especially here in Florida. He was a big supporter of Andrew Gillum. Got behind his campaign early and helped. And we saw what happened with Gillum in the governor's race. You know, he lost. Steyer supported he supported Bill Nelson in the U.S. Senate race. He really pushed hard to get action on climate change in Florida and around the country. We haven't seen much action on that. So I don't know how much, how effective Steyer's campaigns have been. And when you look at something like, unless there's some bombshell in Trump's tax returns or the Mueller report, impeachment is probably a lost cause as well. I mean, you have Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, saying, I'm not going to pursue impeachment. So Steyer can put all the pressure he wants on ranked Democrats, but Pelosi doesn't think this is a winning issue. You know, the politics of this changed substantially. It doesn't look like she's going to go down that road. And you know, as long as he continues to push this impeachment issue and keep it in the spotlight, it's obviously going to continue to be a very political issue. And I think the politics of it, you know, they're not exactly clear. They cut both ways. It does give Trump and his allies some ammo to say, you know, look, the Democrats are just on a, you know, the Mueller report found no collusion, but they continue to go after me. Nothing will satisfy them. They're unreasonable. On the other side, though, you know, Steyer is continuing to pursue an issue that a lot of Democrats do think is valid. A lot of Democrats do think Trump should be impeached. So he's keeping them fired up. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, he's got 8 million names across the country on his mailing list and 500,000 in Florida. If he's going to have an impact in 2020, you know, his grassroots organizing abilities probably will be the biggest impact that he has, just helping to get people out to vote for the Democrats.
All right. Interesting take. What about you, John Kennedy?
Well, I think you have a situation where, you know, you have some Democrats in the state are already growing frustrated that Steyer is refusing to rule out backing challengers in next year's U.S. House primaries. You know, here just a few months after the Democrats took the majority, he's already talked about taking on Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler of New York. Steyer is believed also to be looking at the Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard Neal of Massachusetts. Oversight Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings, another, you know, well-known Maryland Democrat. Steyer is talking about taking the campaign to rank and file Democrats' districts as well, challengers for people, you know, up and down the board. It's just one of those things that this issue could obviously have some backfire effect on Democrats, where, you know, it's more division for a party that right now has at least 16 presidential candidates as of what is this? We're recording this on Thursday morning, and undoubtedly there'll be more Democrats lining up to run for the White House and by the weekend.
Yeah, that 16 number might be obsolete by the time this podcast drops. But you're right. There's a lot of Democrats and a lot of potentials for division. Well, speaking of division in the Democratic Party, John Kennedy, let's move on to Tallahassee, and because I believe I'm hearing that Tallahassee music playing right now. That's the John Kennedy walk-on music, Swamp Rock, Royalty Free. Well, John's going to fill us in on a couple things in Tallahassee. Remember earlier this year when Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of Minnesota accused supporters of Israel of having, quote, allegiance to a foreign country. And that came after she was accused of trafficking in stereotypes about Jews and money when she said U.S. politicians' support for Israel was, she said, quote, all about the Benjamins. And of course, that was all on top of her claim back in 2012 that, quote, Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of Israel. So you had this these comments by Representative Omar, and Congress was ready to move. The Democratic-controlled House was ready to move ahead with a resolution condemning anti-Semitism. But Omar's supporters were worried about singling her out or singling Muslims out. And there was some other backlash and, you know, about throwing Donald Trump in as well. And eventually it morphed into this kind of catch-all resolution condemning all kinds of hate. But it left some bitterness. You know, I remember Representative Ted Deutch from here in South Florida, who represents a large Jewish constituency, saying, why can't we just unambiguously condemn anti-Semitism? Well, fast forward now to Tallahassee. John Kennedy, tell us about what's going on there with some anti-Semitism legislation.
Sure. Yeah, it's you know, Tallahassee frequently is sort of a dirt track version of what goes on in Washington. And here, you know, Republicans are making a major play for Jewish voters at both the national and the state level. And this week, the effort for the Republicans. It had the bonus effect of making things uncomfortable for the state Democratic leader. That's Audrey Gibson of Jacksonville. She said this week that she's going to drop her opposition to an anti-Semitism bill that has really driven a wedge between her and her fellow Democrats, and it drew like widespread criticism from Republican backers of the measure. Gibson this week was the lone vote against legislation that was sponsored by Senator Joe Gruters, a Sarasota Republican, in the Senate Judiciary Committee. She said she questioned his motives for sponsoring this anti-Semitism measure. Gruters is the chairman of the Florida Republican Party, and he was co-chair of President Trump's 2016 campaign in Florida. But he filed the bill just last month, just days after the congressional Democrats had gone through that harangue with the hate speech legislation that followed the controversial comments about Israel from Representative Ilhan Omar. In Tallahassee, now it's Gibson who has become the center of the controversy. Basically, a handful of Senate Democrats who are already uneasy with Gibson as leader have talked about trying to remove her from the top post in the Senate. This is all kind of a whisper campaign. Nobody wants to come out too forceful on it, but Gibson is feeling heat. Here she was this week trying to head off the continuing criticism of her. We have some sound that we can tee up.
It was never my intent to insult in any way the Jewish community or my Jewish colleagues. And for that, I am making sure that that message gets out today.
So Gruters' legislation is pretty simple. It adds discrimination based on religion to what is prohibited in Florida schools. Currently, schools, you know, from kindergarten through college, they ban discrimination on race, national origin, gender, disability, or marital status, but not specifically religion. So the bill targets actions that, quote, are motivated by anti-Semitic intent. And it goes on to detail basically what amounts to such behavior. Gibson's vote on the anti-Semitism bill was seen by many allies as an unforced error, one that basically exposed the party to accusations of discrimination while possibly alienating voters and donors. Florida's large Jewish population tilts Democratic, but it represents an important voting bloc, obviously, heading into next year's presidential contest. And, you know, coincidental to all this, Republican Ron DeSantis on Tuesday of this week, he announced that he and the Florida cabinet are going to hold their May 25th meeting at the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. Now, there's a road trip. He's going to be in Israel on his first international trade mission as governor. But this all kind of plays into Trump in 2017 ordered the embassy moved to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. That's a change that was supported by the conservative government of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who this week he won election to a fifth term as leader. So, you know, DeSantis also has driven the cabinet to impose sanctions on Airbnb in January. That was after the company had prohibited listings in the disputed West Bank. They're company was citing safety concerns, but DeSantis condemned that as targeting Jewish property owners. So, you know, it's an issue that the Republicans have managed to drive this wedge within the Democratic Party right now. Democrats are so, you know, ethnically and sort of culturally divided as a party, or you know, it's a bit of a mosaic what amounts to the Democratic Party even in Florida, and it's easy for these kind of issues to suddenly become inflammatory, and that's where Gibson is stuck in the middle of it in Tallahassee.
Yeah, as we've mentioned before on the podcast, Jewish voters, you know, the 60 or 70% typically go Democratic by 60 or 70%. Margin in elections, and but Republicans often will try to, if they can, you know, peel off even a few percentage points from the Jewish support for Democrats in a state like Florida with all these close elections, it can make a difference. And you know, we've seen that usually in presidential races on the issue of supporting Israel, and Republicans accusing Democrats of not being sufficiently supportive of Israel, but you know, now we're seeing it in state government. This came up a little bit in the governor's race last year, where Andrew Gillum had been supportive of this group that was opposed to that supported the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement of Israel, even though Gillum said he himself did not, but he was tied with a group that supported that. And then you see it with Governor DeSantis on the Airbnb thing and moving the cabinet meeting to Israel. Now, John Kennedy, since you cover state government, have you put in for expensing a trip to Israel to cover that cabinet meeting?
I know that does sound like a must cover for Gatehouse Media, I would think. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, I guess, and maybe we should just do the whole podcast from there.
That's a possibility.
Well, that's So that's certainly you wouldn't expect it to come up in state government, but now you're seeing this potential wedge issue. And John Kennedy, before we go to our next segment, do you see this now that Gibson has withdrawn her opposition to this bill? Do you see any more mileage coming out of this issue?
Well, it's one of those things now that it turns into a little bit of a leadership challenge for Gibson. Whether that continues or not is a question. I think there are those within the Democratic ranks on the Senate that are not, you know, wholly embracing her leadership, and it's a scattering of a few dissidents. But this kind of issue gave them something to seize on as a potential challenge to her leadership. I don't know if there's enough people, enough senators that are disaffected right now to unseat Gibson as a Senate Democratic leader. But it would seem like at the moment, as far as the overall policy of the anti-Semitism bill, I think that's probably going to happen without too much more opposition. I don't think there's any more Democrats that are going to stick their neck out on this.
Yeah. All right. Well, staying with you, John, in Tallahassee, you also wrote recently about a big package of highway construction projects that is moving forward in the legislature. Walk us through a little bit about where these projects are and how much they would cost, and the politics behind them.
Yeah, this emerged as the Senate President Bill Galvano's top priority for this session. It would amount to being the biggest expansion of the state highway network since the creation of the Florida Turnpike back in the 1950s. And it right now looks like it's poised to gain approval from the Florida legislature. But you know, who's driving it? It's mostly road builders and contractors eager for work. You basically have Galvano. He's outlined three major toll roads, which he says will bring jobs and, you know, new opportunity to overlooked regions of Florida. But of course, environmentalists and many planners are warning that this move is really going to threaten waterways and is really just going to promote sprawl across a state that is already riven with sprawl. The roads basically are, tripling the length of the Tampa Bay area Suncoast Parkway, sending it all the way to the Georgia line. He also wants to create a new, this would be a 150-mile Lakeland to Naples highway, similar to something that's been talked about for three decades now, but never started. That's the Heartland Parkway, once called. And then the last big road project that Galvano has been promoting is a 30-mile extension of Florida's Turnpike from where it connects to I-75 near Wildwood. This idea would connect that area to the Suncoast Parkway as it expands northward. But the along the way, there's some wealthy individual landowners and some major agribusinesses that own land along this way. But the real drivers of this seem to be those that would make their living from building roads. The biggest promoters have been the Florida Transportation Builders Association, the Florida Trucking Association, State's Ports Council, Asphalt Contractors Association, and the Florida Chamber of Commerce. These have all been the lead promoters of the roads package as it's been advancing in hearings through the House and Senate. And, typically the way, a bill becomes law in Tallahassee, it ultimately becomes a deal. And what you have right now is the House, which had not shown too much interest in Galvano's idea. Now they seem to be ready to drop opposition to it. in exchange for the Senate taking up the idea of eliminating state control over hospital expansion, the so-called CON process, certifications of need. This is something that Oliva, the House Speaker, Jose Oliva from Miami, he has been promoting a very free market approach to healthcare. And one of the things that he wants to get rid of are these CONs, at least for hospitals. He'd go even further. But the Senate looks like it's willing to do that. And in exchange now, Galvano's Rhodes idea is getting some traction in the House. So it looks like this is going to be happening, although I would say from my reporting on this, Oliva and Governor Ron DeSantis are pretty cautious about really pledging an ironclad commitment to these projects. DeSantis said he's sensitive, as he described it, to the cost of toll roads on average Floridians. And he also acknowledges that he needs to know more about these massive projects. But he's somebody that his focus seems to be more focused on areas where traffic is now dense, places like South Florida and the Tampa Bay area. But it looks like, at the very least, this is going to move forward. It's going to involve money this year and a commitment going into future years. But I think a lot of people in Tallahassee are advancing this thinking that, you know what, this will probably never happen. But you never know.
Zach Anderson, you've looked at this issue a little bit. What's your thought on it?
One of the interesting things to me is this bill is really not getting a whole lot of public attention or pushback other than from environmentalists who are concerned that it'll create a lot of sprawl. But I think it probably deserves a whole lot more scrutiny than it's getting. I mean, this is a hugely consequential bill that it will impact state traffic patterns for decades to come. I mean, as John said, this is the biggest expansion of the highway system in Florida since the 1950s, and it's really moving through with very little debate, probably because it's been the priority of the Senate president who has power, but really been studied these corridors. And the studies that are out there point towards investing in our existing roadways to alleviate traffic congestion rather than creating new roadways to alleviate congestion. And I think that some people, if you're stuck on traffic in Interstate 75 or you're stuck on traffic in I-95, I think a lot of people logically would say, why aren't we making these roads better? Why aren't we making the roads that are congested better so that we don't have this gridlock? Why aren't we planning our growth better? The idea of building these huge new highways in areas that are very sparsely populated instead of investing in the areas that are very populated and over congested, I think probably would probably strike a lot of people as, there's some discord there. And also it really seems like, to some degree, so people are highway planners. There was an Interstate 75 Release Task Force recommended, according to John, the way to deal with on I-75 is to expand the vehicle capacity of the interstate and connecting highways. Highway planners are saying to invest in our current highways. So this sort of if the traffic planning experts say to do one thing and we're saying we're going to build these new roads elsewhere. And then there's also maybe some politics. There's some people who look at the fact that there's a lot of landowners benefit from new highways coming through, and a lot of these people are very influential, big agribusinesses, as John said. There's some big landowners who have property that they're trying to develop north of Tampa, where this new Suncoast Parkway would go. So some people are suspicious of this for that reason. Overall, it just seems like this is a really big thing, a lot of money to be invested without a lot of study and really looking at, is this the best way to alleviate traffic in our state?
Interesting take. Yeah, since I live here in South Florida, what's it going to do to improve my commute on 95 and Florida's Turnpike in South Florida? That's my key concern. But you're right. There certainly seems like there's a lot of there hasn't been a lot of public input into this for something that's been moving forward pretty quickly. Well, John Kennedy, I'm sure you will be keeping us on top of that as it moves through there in Tallahassee. Well, I hear that funky royalty-free music playing again. So let's go back to our pick a number segment. And let's start, let's go lowest to highest this week. John Kennedy, you had a number 10. Can you explain that number, please?
Yeah, George, my 10 is in 10%, which is the percentage of THC, the high-inducing ingredient in medical marijuana. That's the level that the House is talking about capping the new smokable medical pot that is just being made available around the state. Now, our podcast listeners will know that the smokable marijuana bill was the first one signed into law recently by Governor Ron DeSantis. But the House sponsor of that effort, Representative Ray Rodriguez, he's a Republican from Southwest Florida. He's concerned about some of the new leaf product being too potent, and he wants to set a ceiling on pot smokers' eyes. The 10% is down from what industry people are saying is about a 15 to 25% THC average for what's on the shelves of Florida's medical marijuana shops. But this move to reduce the potency level is controversial. This week, the House committee members who supported the change were booed and barked at by members of the public who were medical marijuana users, who say that people will either have to pay twice as much, you know, by purchasing twice as much of a costly marijuana product, turn to the street market, or struggle with less pain relief. Meanwhile, the Senate hasn't really committed to taking up this THC cap, which, as the session is sort of reaching the home stretch now, raises some questions about whether this is going to get through or not. But it's certainly going to be a discussion point between the two sides here as the legislature heads toward home.
Seems like there's just always a marijuana issue in the Florida legislature.
Oh, absolutely. It's taken over from gambling as one of those fought over about issues.
Perennial. Okay. My number was 62. 62 is the turnout percentage of 18 to 35-year-olds in Florida who were registered to vote last year by Tom Steyer's Next Gen America. That 62% turnout among the 35 and under set compares to only a 38% turnout for that group overall in Florida. The difference, according to the Steyer people at least, is that they, after registering somebody, invested a lot of money and time actively contacting and remaining engaged with these people to get them to actually come out to the polls and vote. And the reason that's significant is, Steyer, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, as we played that clip of him, while he was clearly disappointed with Florida, he saw this turnout among younger and liberal leaning voters as a silver lining. And so he believes that he can build on that in the 2020 election in Florida. All right. And our last number, Zach Anderson, 15 million. What is that?
15 million is how much money Moat Marine Laboratory would receive over 5 years to study ways to mitigate red tide under a bill that's been moving through the legislature. And it looked like this bill was really sailing through without much opposition. But this week, some environmentalists started to criticize the legislation, and their criticism really gets to the heart of the debate over environmental protection that we've talked about on this show when it comes to how do you improve Florida's water quality and how do you prevent what we saw last year, which was really a devastating series of algae blooms, including red tide, the blue-green algae, brown tide over in the Indian River Lagoon, that really crippled the state's economy to a large degree and caused a lot of consternation in many communities. And environmentalists have started seizing on the Moat Marine money and saying, look, this is just for trying to clean up and trying to kill red tide. You should be focusing on ways to prevent red tide from getting worse in the first place, stopping the nutrient pollution from getting into the waterways. And that nutrient pollution is what algae feeds on, and it contributes to these blooms. Although red tide is natural, it is exacerbated by the nutrients that people put in the waterways. And so I think it's going to be a debate right up to the end of session is, are you throwing money to clean up the problem and try and mitigate it? Or are you doing anything to regulate some of the pollution that's going into these waterways? There's been some bills moving forward that would implement some new regulations, but it's not clear at this point if any of them are going to pass. So something that I'll be watching up until the hanky drops on the end of session here.
All right. Well, thanks for that number. And that concludes another one of our Inside Florida Politics podcasts. I am Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett. As always, it's been my honor to be your host and to work with these outstanding journalists, Zach Anderson, the politics editor for the Sarasota Herald Tribune, and Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy in Tallahassee. Normally, we're assisted by Adam Fish, the digital audio production director for Gatehouse, but he was on assignment this week, so handling all the audio duties this week is Corzano. That's the team here in West Palm Beach of Thomas Cordy and Joe Corzano. Thank you.